What song was that, Mark?
Layla.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, the mighty 101.5 FM. I am one of your co-hosts, Jim Samaria.
Yes, you are. And I'm your co-host, Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you songs, insights, backstories, and interviews covering rock music and more from the 1950s through the 1980s or wherever the music takes us.
Mark and I are authors of the book Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, which you could find online at the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum website. Did you know that, Mark?
I knew that, yes, but thanks for confirming that. You know?
And appreciate the book has my photos of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by a guy who kind of reminds me of a teddy bear, Mr. Mark Plotnick.
Well, it's true, Jim. My wife says I'm very huggable. But what a great segue to today's show.
I'm very clever.
Yes, you are. Yeah. Well, on January 8th of this year, the king of rock and roll, and of course we're talking about Elvis Presley, would have turned 88 years old. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So today we are dedicating the entire show to Elvis.
And to help us out is Joe Tunzi, an authority on all things Elvis. Joe's company, Jat Publishing, J-A-T Publishing, has published over 60 books, man, 60 books, all about Elvis, and they have audio CDs, DVDs, much, much more. It's an amazing website. Folks, go to it, and you'll see all the things they have to offer. You'll be blown away.
I know. This is a prolific man, that's for sure. Well, today's Joe is no ordinary Joe. Like us, he is a native Chicagoan. He graduated from Taft High School in 1971. And as a Sullivan High School graduate, I sadly recall how Taft kicked our butts in the Blue Division football. They called it Blue Division back then. I don't know what it is today.
Yeah, who knows? And I graduated high school in 1971. So we're the same age. We're known each other a long time, Joe. We met many years ago.
Yep.
Well, that's so sad, Jim.
Yeah, it is. Joe's won many awards. He's received letters from four presidents acknowledging his work, and he's been on numerous radio and TV shows, and we're very happy to have him here. So welcome, Joe.
Yeah, Joe, welcome.
Yeah, great to be here.
Can I just ask Joe one quick question? This is a trivia question. Who said, Elvis is my religion? If it were not for him, I'd be selling encyclopedias.
That's a good one, man.
Yeah. Well, you'll never guess.
Oh, man.
He's Bruce Springsteen.
Oh?
Yeah.
If it was for
Elvis, he'd be selling encyclopedias.
Wow.
Can you believe that? Wow, what an influence that guy had.
Little Bruce. Well,
I did not know that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you do a book on it. Bruce and Elvis.
Do your 61st book.
That's right. Well, let's get right to it, Joe. How did you get involved with Elvis memorabilia? How did that all occur?
Oh, well, let's see. I started being a fan in 1967, and I think I brought this up. I was into the Beatles, of course, and was into the Rolling Stones, and it was basically getting back into Elvis because, actually, in 1960, my dad was driving, and we went to the movie at the Portage Theater on Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, Northwest Side. And he said, wait a minute, I got to go in and get this record. And I said, okay, I'll come in with you. He said, yeah, come on in. It was a place called Deluxe Music on Milwaukee Avenue. And I remember him buying, and my dad was a big Mario Lanza fan. And I remember my dad buying It's Now or Never by Elvis. And he says, I got to get this record. And, of course, It's Now or Never is a takeoff on O Solo Mio, which was recorded by Lanza and Enrico Caruso. So my dad loved It's Now or Never because it had this Italian flair. So I remember being... in 1960, getting that record, and also the Frank Sinatra show, when Elvis came back from the Army, Sinatra had him as his guest, Welcome Home Elvis. And I remember sitting there with my family, and my dad, again, was a Sinatra fan, and we watched Welcome Home Elvis on TV. And then that was my introduction to Elvis, and I became a fan pretty early on. I was 7 years old, and I remember watching Elvis, and I remember watching that show, and there was something different. You know, I didn't see the Sullivan shows. I was too young for those. But or the performances from the Dorsey in the 50s, all those great performances I didn't see. But this one I watched, and we watched it together as a family. And I remember being very awestruck, you know, and seeing, man, this guy is a little different than, say, Sinatra or Sammy Davis and Peter Lawford. They seem to be a little bit out of it.
It was cool.
Yeah.
Well, so was Sinatra, but so was Elvis.
Yeah. But Elvis had this charismatic, bring you kind of in to find out what else is going on here. You know, there's more to Elvis than meets the eye here when I'm watching this. So I gotta explore it. So basically, that's how I got started into knowing about Elvis. And then the Beatles came along, 1964 and February, and we all gathered around the TV again. It was sort of like watching Sinatra, only this time it was February of 64, and it was the Beatles, and we all sat around and watched the Beatles. And then that was my kind of calling card to become more interested in what's happening with the British invasion and the music of the, and I got more into music. You know, I had the Elvis beginning there, and then the Beatles take over in 64, and then back to Elvis again in 68 with the TV special. So that pretty much got to my fascination with collecting Elvis, buying Elvis records, buying all kinds of music. I bought everything, you know. But I was fascinated with the, not only the music, but also of the fashion, the clothes, the hair. You get taken in, and you know what? It's, you become a, I hate to use the word groupie, but, you know. That's really what you become. You become a fan, kind of like a collector fan and all in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have so much memorabilia. Just tell us, you know, why you started that business, and is it approved by Priscilla and Graceland?
Yeah, they know of me, and they know my work, and I have always sent them a copy of each book, and they have bought them. One of the surprises was I did a book called 64, The Year That Changed America and Me, which was a book based on me being 10 years old, or 11. It started with the Kennedy assassination. I remember that. And I wrote a book about how it looked to be through the eyes of a 10 or 11-year-old in the year 1964. And I thought, you know what? It's sort of like the TV series The Wonder Years, if you remember that show.
Of course.
Yeah, and I wanted to do a book that represented it, represents my look through my eyes at what was happening in 1964, because I do think that the title says it all, 1964, the year that changed America and me. I think that that is what really happened with the Kennedy assassination, and then you had the Beatles. Now, I always looked at it that we were looking for something. And a lot of people may agree with this or disagree with it, depends. But when Kennedy got shot, we were all, you know, no matter how old you were,
yes,
we were all taken back. That was something that should never have happened. And you realize that, this is a change. This is another world-changing event. And it did. And I think that we were needed something in February, you know, after November and the 8-10 week mourning of JFK. And then we needed something that would be
uplifting.
Uplifting, yeah. Yeah. And what could be better than the British invasion and the Beatles in February in 1964 and Sullivan?
Interesting point. I like
that. You know, and I think that that's where people were letting it finally go.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we need to put that aside a little bit, as bad as it is, but we need to move on. And I think that was a moment where we all kind of moved on. And if you remember after that, we started thinking a little more and having a little more fun.
Well, we all know that, you know, what we listen to early on in our lives during our formative years affects us later on in terms of the music we make or we listen to. So in terms of music, what was Elvis listening to when he was growing up?
You know what? That's a great question because I think I have a good answer. I visioned and I worked on a few projects where I thought, you know what, you should open up the show. You should open up the movie with Elvis sitting, you know, in Tupelo in his home with a small little radio by his bed, and turning the knob on that radio and listening, and then hearing opera. And then turning the channel and listening to country, and then moving over and listening to rhythm and blues, and then going back and listening to bluegrass, and going back and listening. And Elvis, I can visualize him sitting on his bed with that radio and going through each channel and each station and listening and paying attention to each one of those genres and listening to what not only would be rock and roll, but country, gospel, jazz, rhythm and blues, opera. And I think that's what Elvis was about.
Yeah, and all of that is evident in the music he made over the many years that he was recording and performing. So, well, Elvis started out as an 18-year-old truck driver, and I know if I'm going to say anything correct here, just let me know. He wanted to record a song for his mother, who he dearly loved, and that song, I believe, was My Happiness?
Yeah.
Okay, so he went to a local recording studio in Memphis, which happened to be Sun Records, owned, of course, by Sam Phillips. Phillips liked what he heard and arranged a professional recording session.
Yeah, and then in 1954, Elvis released his first record on Sun Records with the legendary Scotty Moore on guitar, Bill Black on bass, and they recorded That's All Right, which was originally written and performed by a bluesman, Arthur Crudup. And with the help of a Memphis DJ, you know what, Mark? The song became a hit.
Yes,
so,
it did.
Folks, after that song came out, the rest is history.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do it, that's all right. That's all right. It's all right, Mama, anyway, do. Well, Mama, she done told me, Papa done told me, too. Son, that gal you fooling with, she ain't no good for you. But that's all right. That's all right. That's all right, Mama, anyway, do.
Well, that was Elvis with his first song, That's All Right. Great song. You are listening to that classic rock show on WHRULP, Huntley Community Radio 101.5 FM, where we play the best music of all time.
Yes, we do. And we've got another question for Joe. So when did Colonel Tom Parker come into the picture, and why did Sam Phillips sell Elvis's contract to RCA?
Well, Parker came in around late 1955. He was interested in Elvis. He saw Elvis, he followed him on a few tours. But 55 he came in, and of course he signed him in 56, and the contract from Sam Phillips. So Sam, basically, you know, $35,000 was a lot of money back then. And he had Jerry Lee Lewis in the wings, and I have a feeling that he thought Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, I'm going to sell Elvis, get the $35,000, the $5,000 bonus, and I got Jerry Lee. I really do think, you know, a lot of people don't think that way, but I do. I actually think that Phillips thought that, you know, Jerry Lee is going to be the one that's going to take me to some other heights, and I'm going to take the money. I'm going to take the $35,000. I'm going to take the $5,000 bonus, and I'm going to get out of Dodge. And I got Jerry Lee, and I got another stable of some other artists, and I think I'm going to take that cash and go.
Take the money and run.
Well, yeah. And Jerry Lee Lewis was great, you know, but he was no Elvis.
Right.
Well, anyway, so now Elvis is on RCA, and he had his first hit, and it went number one, and that was Heartbreak Hotel. It topped the pop and country charts, which was rare back in the day. The song was written by Tommy Durden and May Boren Axon. But Elvis received a songwriting credit due to Colonel Parker insisting he get one. You know, Colonel Parker was pretty tough.
Yeah, he was, Jim. And the backing musicians were his main man, Scotty Moore on guitar, Bill Black on bass, DJ Fontana on drums, Floyd Kramer on piano, and Chet Atkins on acoustic guitar. And in my opinion, Heartbreak Hotel remains one of his most passionate performances. So here it is, Heartbreak Hotel.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that Heartbreak Hotel, where I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely, I'll be just so lonely, I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. So I'll be just so lonely, baby. I'll be just so lonely. I'll be so lonely, I'll make it die. Now the bellhop's tears keep flowing, and the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on Lonely Street, they'll never, never look back. And think it's so, I'll be just so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely. Well, they're so lonely, I'll make it die. Well, if your baby leaves you, you got a tale to tell. Well, just take a walk down Lonely Street to Heartbreak Hotel, where you will be, but you'll be so lonely, baby. Well, you'll be lonely, you'll be so lonely, you could die.
Now that is singing, I gotta tell you. That was Heartbreak Hotel by the great Elvis. Well, now that he's on RCA and he has Heartbreak Hotel as a big hit, he's a huge recording star, Joe. And so the next step for him is movies. So tell us how that began and whose idea was it to put him in the movies?
Well, Parker definitely had a strong influence on Elvis's movie career from the beginning. He knew Hal Wallace. He knew a lot of these people. You know, the one thing that Parker had, connections. You know, his other manager didn't have, you know, Bob Neal didn't have the know-it-all. And Colonel Parker was a guy that was influential and knowledgeable and knew the right buttons to push. And that's how I think he knew people at Paramount. He knew how to position Elvis in the movies. And Parker was the big influence on getting Elvis's first movie role, Love Me Tender. And I think that that's what Elvis saw in Parker.
Yeah, I think the key word is positioning him in the movies. That was a very good point.
Just really quick question. So was Elvis receptive to being in the movies right away, or was that something he was hesitant?
Good question, Jim.
I think Elvis loved it.
Yeah.
I think if Elvis had it his way. See, Elvis was going to do The Rainmaker, okay, which...
Oh, great movie.
Yeah, which starred Burt Lancaster and Katharine Hepburn. Elvis did a screen test for that movie, and so that was going to be his first vehicle for Paramount. It was going to be... I think he was going to play the role of Earl Holliman. Earl Holliman played the part that Elvis was going to play, but that's what Elvis was going to do. He was going to do The Rainmaker. Parker saw that, I don't know, I think Parker kind of pulled that back and said, you know what, I think we may not want to stick him with Burt Lancaster and Katharine Hepburn since it's his first movie. Let's get him into something where he had a little more control of it, I think. Mm. Not only Parker control, but Elvis control. So he started with Richard Egan and Deborah Padgett in Love Me Tender, which I think was a smart move because... it shows that Elvis, you know, really had the beginning of some great acting skills. And I think he loved the motion picture business, and I think he loved doing the films. I think that was one of his, you know, great, I think, contributions. From two of his movies, two of his best songs, Love Me Tender and Jailhouse Rock.
Love me tender, love me sweet. Never let me go. You have made my life complete, and I love you so. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I always will. Love me tender, love me long, take me to your heart, for it's there that I and we'll never part. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I love me tender, love me dear, tell me you are mine. I'll be yours through all the years, till the end of time. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I always will.
Was a purple gang, let's rock. No one's looking at a chance to make a break. But he turned and shifted and he said, nix, nix. I wanna stick around, I wanna get my kick. Let it rock. Everybody, let it rock. Everybody in old Selma was down to the jail, let it rock. Down to the jail, let it rock. Down to the jail, let it rock. Down to the jail, let it rock.
All right, everyone, please stay tuned for part two of their classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP 101.5 FM. We are talking with one of the foremost experts on Elvis Presley and his music, Mr. Joe Tunzi.